You Can't Forget What You Don't Know, Part 2. It's Hidden Agenda, everybody. Brought to you today by Executive Properties. Are you still putting off that project around the house that's been bugging you forever? Do you think you can wait until spring and call a contractor and have the work done ASAP? Well, good luck with that. Executive Properties has openings right now to get that project done. In fact, you can check out their Google reviews. Aaron says Chris and his team did a spectacular job on the damage to my aunt's garage and siding. Kept us up to date on the progress, and the finished product was amazing. Thank you for your professionalism and hard work. Hey, get that project done sooner than later. Call Executive Properties, 701-330-1273. All right, everybody, if you have any questions or comments for myself or David Waterman with the Midwest Public Health Coalition or Paul the producer, our phone number is 701-213-0863, 701-213-0863. Feel free to text or comment. We will try to keep up with them. Now, here's the thing. If you want to watch the show, we're taking it off YouTube and Facebook, all right? It's just not worth it. Go to Rumble. You can watch the entire show on Rumble. You'll be able to get back and forth to us. Again, go to Rumble. We're not going to be on YouTube or Facebook. And again, our number, 701-213-0863. Before we get rolling here, let's do it, our daily segment called Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. Here we go, Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. Remember when plastic surgery was a taboo subject? Yeah, you didn't talk about plastic surgery at all. Well, now you mentioned Botox, and nobody raises eyebrows. There you go. Nobody raises an eyebrow. Anyway, I want to mention this quick. Sons of the Legion, going to have a Pizza Ranch fundraiser tomorrow from 4:30 to 8:30. Go help them out. This is for the North Dakota and Minnesota Honor Flight. What a great, great organization that is. That's tomorrow at the Pizza Ranch from 4:30 to 8:30, with all the proceeds going for the North Dakota and Minnesota Honor Flight. Here we go. We'll do like we do every week on Hidden Agenda, and I apologize. I was gone last week. Man, I have been fighting a cold, but here's my little monologue thing. I always start with Joe Biden's disapproval rate. 58%, his approval rating at 38%. That's 1 point higher than his all-time lowest, 38%. New bill in Minnesota, they're trying to make Minnesota a sanctuary state, HF 3459. If you recall, last year in Bemidji, 11-year-old girl brutally raped in a house that had 11 illegal immigrants in it. Now, under this new law, they wouldn't even be apprehended. This happened in our backyard, folks. We can't make my state a sanctuary state, or I'm going to be living in your state. How about this? Did you hear about the Planet Fitness story in Alaska? Now, my wife goes to Planet Fitness here almost every day in Grand Forks. I don't know if she's still going to. She knows about this, but this was a Planet Fitness in Alaska. In the girls' bathroom, there was a man in there shaving. In the girls' bathroom, while a younger 12- or 13-year-old girl sat there all distressed, didn't know what to do, wrapped in a towel. So a lady who was a member of Planet Fitness complained to management. They revoked her membership for complaining. Planet Fitness, if that's how you want to do business, well, then I hope you revoke a whole bunch more memberships. There you go. Guns, this is something, you know, our Sleepy Joe and his whole entourage over there, they're all about gun control. Now, listen to this. Since 2016, deaths caused by abortion is one of the leading causes of death now. Since 2016, 501,325 deaths from abortion, 282,038 deaths from heart disease, 271,640 deaths from cancer. 21st on the list, murder by guns, 5,276 since 2016. There you go. Also, one last thing. These people that think things are better with our current president, I'm wondering how much of a raise they got, or how could they not notice how things are not so much better? Last day under Trump, inflation rate was 1.4%. It's now 8.3%. Gas prices, the last day under Donald Trump, $2.39 a gallon, now $3.76 and rising. 30-year mortgage rates, 2.65%, now 7.08%. They're going down a little bit. Last day under Donald Trump, average rent price, $1,625, now $2,039. Trump, the NASDAQ was up 13,342. Now with Sleepy Joe, the NASDAQ is down 10,829. Grocery prices had an increase of 3.7%. during Trump's 4 years. Now they're at increased 13.5%. Electricity rose 1.5% under Trump. They've risen 15.8% under Biden. And finally, the average hourly earnings, they increased by 4% under Donald Trump. Average hourly earnings have decreased 2.87% under Sleepy Joe. How about that?
That's proof. President Biden is making America better.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He's a great president. Guy said the other day, talking to my son, he said he's the best president we've ever had. You like, know, best president in my lifetime.
And you know, the thing is I could show them all of this stuff. I mean, this is research I did.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't believe it. I mean, they wouldn't believe. Joe Biden himself could say, oh, yeah, all of this is true. And I know people that would go, no, it's not. I mean, come on, really?
Or they would just stare at you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
because
right.
It's like it couldn't compute in their brain.
Oh boy, I don't get it.
I like one of the names that I just recently saw for him, where it's Joe Bribin.
That's a good one.
Sad but true. Yeah, that's wow. Yeah, millions. That guy's raked in millions. He and his son, Hunter, working together, working the Biden name. It's brought their family literally millions of dollars, but there's nothing to see here, folks. Move on. Let's go attack Trump because he, yeah. You know.
And I mean, did you get a 13.5% annual wage increase because you didn't notice groceries went up that high? I mean, come on. You know? Oh, boy. I that's just what gets me is you can put the proof right there in front of people and they still, yeah, they look at y'all cross-eyed like,
that's so here's the phrase when you're talking to people about how great Biden is as a president. You just look at them and say, you sound like you've been vaccinated.
And you know, when I got this wonderful hat, thank you to my sister down in Alabama for getting me this hat. She also gave me a whole bunch of these, and I shouldn't say this because I'll end up busting myself, but I forgot I had them. I just found them the other day, the little stickers that have Joe saying I did that. Where should we start? Where should we start? I can hear the mall management. Hey, was that? Nope. No, it wasn't me. All right. So I missed last week. My apologies.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I think it was a great show. What was the show last week about?
You can't forget what you don't know.
That's right.
Part one.
Yeah. No, you weren't here. And we had Dean back in the studio.
Yeah.
Dean was pushing the buttons and pulling the levers.
Oh, thank goodness he was here, boy. I was hurting. Yeah.
He really, I heard that. So I was gone with COVID two weeks ago,
yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And then and I hope it wasn't COVID for you because every time I get COVID now, since the second time, it really messes with my brain.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, according to a study that was done of 800,000 people who had gotten sick from COVID, not tested positive, but actually gotten sick from COVID, in a significant percentage, I don't remember what the percentage is, they found long-term cognitive decline.
Oh.
I might have mentioned that last week. I can't remember because I have it myself.
It's not just the 80s.
But it's not. It's even in young people that get COVID, it targets part of the brain. And so I was happy that it didn't say permanent cognitive decline. It's just a long-term cognitive decline. And some people would probably roll that under the category of long COVID. In fact, I know they have because I've heard, oh, that's long COVID. But whatever it is, it hits your brain and it lasts for a long time. And I struggled for 2 years after the first time I got COVID to try to get that back. And I finally was just starting to say, I think I might have mentioned to you, Paul. I said, you know, I'm starting to be able to think clearly again and remember things that I read more than 30 seconds. I got COVID for the third time and whew, it was all gone again.
It's nice to see that something good came out of COVID, though, because now I got an excuse.
I think I know what happened to me. I was at the Fargo Dome with about 18,000 screaming, snot-nosed little kids for Disney on Ice. And, of course, it was my wife and I and our two grandkids. I was the only one that come out of there sick. But I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. I didn't have the headache. I'm finally done with the coughing fits, except for if I do start to cough, it keeps going because all that stuff's finally starting to break loose. But
yeah.
My voice is still shot. I still have the aches, but it's just a cold. And the thing is, I heard from one person say he went to the doctor, he had the same thing, and they told him expect to be coughing for 30 to 60 days. And I'm like, oh, man, I can't be doing that. But not. So no, far, so good.
And you know what? You don't see a lot of people talking about this, you know, on mainstream media. But I'm pretty sure the CDC announced that they're just treating COVID as the flu now.
I think I've heard that, actually.
Yeah. So yeah, the CDC changed their guidelines on COVID, and so now you just treat it just like you would the flu.
They're going to be changing their minds on a lot of things. You know, so when they come out and say things like, yeah, it turns out masks don't work, and the six-foot thing doesn't work, and shutting down businesses doesn't work, and the shot that we call the vaccine doesn't work, that's going to be massive headlines on CNN, right? That's not going to happen. Right. No, they're not even going to mention it. Then maybe some towards the end of the show or something say, yeah, CDC has revised its guidelines on blah, 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 blah. And now, you know, and we talked about this on the show for a couple of years, that guidelines are not rules and they're not legislation. It's not a law. But everybody was treating it like that. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got to follow. We have to follow the CDC guide. No, you don't. A guideline means it's a guide for you to follow if you want to.
Something you can use to go off of.
If you want to.
Yep.
But there's no rule. Mm-hmm. But the schools, universities, stores, government offices, they all said, we got to follow the guidelines. As if somehow that was a mandate from Congress.
Well, nobody followed the Midwest Public Health Coalition's guidelines. Nobody followed John Roberts' guidelines or Paul the Producer's guidelines.
You're right. Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess we don't. But now, it turns out, our guidelines were true. Right.
Yeah, and now here's another thing. When you're wrong, maybe if it takes you a day or a year or 10 years to realize it, do you admit it?
Absolutely.
Okay, you?
Yeah. Huh?
Most of the time, if you're wrong, you'll admit it, right?
Yeah.
Think the CDC will?
No.
Of course not.
No, wait, no. No, Paul actually, he's one of the most, Paul is, I'll just say this, Paul is a humble guy. I've heard Paul admit multiple times when he was wrong about something. I, you know what? If you can't admit you're wrong, you cannot learn.
Right,
you
right.
can't get any smarter. You mm-hmm. can't get any better at what you do because it means that you're locked into insisting that whatever you believe or whatever you do is the best way, and that's just the way it's going to stay. Okay, so well, enjoy diaperhood. I mean, why would you want to? Who would want to live like that?
Yeah.
A lot of the positions that I take now, I take very strongly because I used to believe the opposite.
Sure. Sure.
And when I found out mm-hmm. I was wrong, I thought, wow, mm-hmm. I don't want other people to be wrong the way I was wrong because it's not good for you. It can hurt you in many cases.
I hated Donald Trump.
So did I.
I couldn't stand the guy.
I was one of the first Never Trumpers. You probably could have had a party together.
Yeah. And now I wish he never would have left, you know?
Exactly.
You'll actually hear, if you pay attention, most of the time whenever I say something, I say, I could be wrong, but this is what I heard.
That's right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I try to say the same thing, unless I know that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have confidence. You know, even in my personal life, for years, probably because the first shaver, you know, I started shaving with a blade, but then I switched to an electric mm-hmm. shaver. And the first one that I got was, I think it was made by Braun, and it's just a straight edge, you know. And I shaved and I replaced that one when it broke. For a couple of decades, I replaced my shaver with it. And the last one that I had, I don't remember who made it, it was so loud. Even I read a review on it, and it said, it does a great job, but it sounds like a nest of angry hornets, you know? And in fact, it was so loud, I used to plug my ear when I shaved close to my ear. And then it eventually broke or something happened to it, and I just said, okay, forget it. And I'm out of town. I go into a big store.
Planet Fitness.
So I'm looking for another shaver, and this lady, this friend of ours who I'm with, says, yeah, how about the rotary one's pretty good. I'm like, rotary shavers are stupid. They're a weird design, these three different round heads.
And I have one of those,
That's dumb. Who would ever want a shaver like that? So I do a little Google search, and by this time, I haven't had it for a few days, so my beard is kind of, and I don't like that, because the thicker your beard gets, this is not what the show is about, folks, by the way. The thicker your beard gets, the stubble, the harder it is to shave with a straight edge.
It starts to pull them razor. Out.
Yeah, it's just you got to do it over and over. It takes forever. And I read somewhere that rotary shavers are better at handling a thicker beard. And I'm going, that's interesting. So I finally, I'm back and forth. I finally go, okay, all right, this is new territory for me. I don't know if I, $70. And I shell out for the rotary thing. And I charge it up. And I take it in the bathroom the first time. And I turn it on. And it's like, what's wrong with this thing? I can barely hear
it. Barely hear him, yeah.
And it's just, I'm thinking, this must be a really weak motor. It sounds like it's doing nothing. And then I go to shave. Whoa, it's like just taking it off. I couldn't believe it. Rotary shavers are so much better than those straight shavers. For 20 years, I probably have suffered a couple decibels of hearing loss from those old loud ones. The rotary shaver, it's quieter than my electric toothbrush.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. How come no one ever told me?
They probably did.
But they never did. Okay. No, not until I gave up on my... I just assumed that I had the best shaver because I didn't know any better. That's my point. I didn't know any better until I finally took the risk and tried it. And hey...
Just use a bayonet like Crocodile Dundee.
a big Bowie knife.
And what you have right now with that method is considered a close shave.
Well, no Band-Aids anyway, or no pieces of Kleenex stuck to your neck.
That's right. So we, I'm a little bit surprised, even though we don't hear about it that much, because the mainstream media always sets the narrative. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
They don't report on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, or Fox what you want to know about. Hey, I wonder what's going on in the world in this area. Mm-hmm. They don't report on that. Somebody in an ivory tower decides what they're going to be reporting on.
Sure.
I'd love to hear CNN news anchors say, no, they don't. We do.
Yeah, right.
I'd love to hear that. Yep, but because they would say that. But someone decides what they're going to report, and then everybody reports on the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They all follow each other because you can start switching channels. They're all reporting on the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
From the same perspective.
Yep. There's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah.
You're seeing that?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're all just, every single station, they're repeating the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, what are they saying? So what's the current narrative on the
news? Because Trump said that there was going to be a bloodbath if he didn't get elected.
Oh.
But what he was talking about was, I think, tariffs on China.
And Joe, they spun it around isn't it a new ad for a new campaign ad or something like that?
I don't even know.
I just read about it and I thought if it was coming out of Joe Biden, I'm not even going to look into it anymore. So I didn't, but I did read the headline.
So I'm sure that they will find a way to spin that into, probably what they'll do is they'll take that statement and they'll find a way to say that's what he said on January 6th.
Right? Yeah, right.
Oh, that's right. That's right, Marie. Car manufacturing in Mexico.
That was...
Oh, sure.
Okay. So, you know what? There's so much that the mainstream media is not talking about that we could talk about. If this show was 5 hours long, we could probably get to half of it. But here's the deal. The thing in Hamas, right now, Israel is still working at wiping out Hamas, which is still in Gaza. And the mainstream media and other outlets are still spewing lies about Israel. Here's the thing. Here's what's interesting. And I can prove this, although that's not what the show was about today. But I'm just going to make this statement. Do you know that Hamas, which is like a spawn of the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization under Yasser Arafat, They agree with this statement. We love death. Talking to Jews, we love death as much as you love life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really true. And by their actions, you can see that that's true. But what's interesting is that I've listened to military experts talking about it, and they say that Hamas, what they want as much as they want Jewish deaths, the death of Jewish civilians, is the death of Palestinian civilians. They want Palestinian civilians, women and children, to be great. They want a lot of them to die. They want specifically for the Israeli Defense Force to, during the strikes that their war against Hamas, to kill Palestinian women and children. They want that. They're not trying to protect them. They want them to kill them so that they can point to Israel as this terrible, horrible, brutal, evil nation that kills women and children. That's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So they do everything that they can to make sure that women and children and civilians are in harm's way when Israel is trying to take out their enemy, which is Hamas, which is right. And Hamas is a genocidal organization. They are trying to, the phrase from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That phrase is a genocidal phrase. It literally means we're going to destroy every single Jew, man, woman, and child from the river, which nobody knows which river it is, I know, to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
That's their goal. That's a genocidal chant, okay? Anybody that says that, they're chanting for genocide.
Okay.
Okay. While Israel, on the other hand, and their history is replete with this, and again, I can point to proof after proof after proof of this, and the military people from the United States who work with the Israeli military have come back and said they bend over backwards, the IDF bends over backwards to prevent civilian casualties on the other side. That's why before they attacked Gaza, before they attacked any part of Gaza, they sent millions of phone calls to civilians living in that area, dropped millions of leaflets to the civilians living in that area saying, get out because we're attacking Hamas and you're where they are. You need to move. You need to go, okay? Because we don't want to kill you. Like I said couple of weeks ago, former Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir said famously, of course, nobody remembers it anymore, to the PLO, the Palestinians, we can forgive you for killing our children. We can never forgive you for forcing us to kill yours.
Yeah.
Because they've been playing that game for decades. They put civilian men, women, and children in harm's way and then hope that the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, will kill some of them so that then they can point the finger.
Sure.
Look, they're killing women and children and civilians.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that they go out of their way to make sure that they don't kill any or they kill as few as possible. While Hamas just came in, they marched across the borders at Gaza and deliberately slaughtered women and children.
Yeah.
And they filmed it.
Yeah.
And then they posted those films. And people, what's the response of people? Oh, look how evil Hamas is. No, it's those stupid, terrible Jews. What? How does that? It's like blaming a woman who's being raped for causing this man to have to go out of his way to rape her. I mean, it's crazy talk.
Well, you say it's a genocidal statement. You would think that somebody would go on these college campuses and just say, by saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
Yeah.
I mean, that would just be like saying from the Atlantic to the Pacific, America would be free if we just wiped out every other nation on earth and just kept America. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Or to say, yeah, well, let's see. Let me think. From the Atlantic to the Pacific, America will be free.
Murray says no. I don't know the exact geography, but just saying like, destroy Canada, destroy Mexico, destroy Russia, destroy China, destroy every other nation on Earth.
Yeah, good.
And America will be free.
I follow you. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So the point is Israel, the Jews in Israel are living on their land and they just want to live there and be left alone. They want to be left alone. 35 years ago, I was talking with an Israeli farmer who came over here because we actually use some of their technology in farming potatoes. And I was talking to him. I said, listen, all this conflict going on over there. And I really didn't know anything about it at the time. This is like 35 years ago. And I said, what's the deal? I mean, what are you after? He said, we just want to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
We want to live on our land. We don't want to be left alone. But if that's true, then how do you get the world to hate people that just want to be left alone, who just want peace? They're just looking for peace. Just leave us alone. Well, let's look at all the times that they've invaded other countries. There aren't any.
Right.
Except for when they heard that they were about to be invaded again, and they said, okay, we're going to strike preemptively because we can't afford those casualties again.
Yep.
And they did that. But aside from that, And again, it was coming against them. I mean, if you heard that those guys were going to come and attack you, which, by the way, that's another technique of warfare, the Hutus and the Tutsis, for example. But the point is, if that's true, how do you get the world to hate them? How about let's spread lies about them? And let's talk about how they want to take over and they want to do this and they want to do that. And just make it all up and convince people that it's true. That's exactly how the war against the Hutus and the Tutsis went. Because one side was told that the other side was about to kill them. They're going to come slaughter them. So they got up in arms and they said, well, we're going to kill them first. But it wasn't really true. The attacks on Israel, they really were true, but that's another story, which we're going to get into at a later time if you want to. So today, here's the thing that's interesting. We know that Hitler killed 12 million people in the concentration camp, half of which 6 million were Jews.
Yep.
There's all kinds of propaganda out about that. I don't know. I think your wife has been to one of the Holocaust museums.
Yeah, she has. She's been to one of the camps. Yeah. Yep.
I visited the camp in Auschwitz. The camp in Auschwitz when I was there years ago. And there's all kinds of lies put out about that. Oh, that's not true. There was never 6 million Jews. There were only 3 concentration camps, and I couldn't possibly kill them. No, no, no. There were dozens and dozens of concentration camps. There were the big ones that we know about, Auschwitz, Treblinka, and Dachau. But then there were dozens of other smaller ones scattered throughout the countryside, and they were killing Jews as well.
They're still buried everywhere, and they'll probably never know.
Right, that's right. So the question is, when we hear the word anti-Semitism, that an anti-Semite is somebody who dislikes Semites. What's a Semite? A Semite is someone who comes from the line of Shem, and they're the Jewish people. Although they're actually, because Abraham was from the line of Shem, so his descendants are Shemites, or Semites as they're called today. But so are the Arabs. But there's never been a group of people who's trying to wipe out the Arabs. I mean, are you familiar with one? Do you know of anybody who's trying? Let's just kill all the Arabs.
Yeah.
The Arabs, those terrible Arabs.
Yeah.
I've never riding
around
that.
In the desert, keeping to themselves, those son of a...
Yeah, I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
So this, because all the Arabs are also descendants of Abraham, right, through Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-Semitism that we hear is really Jew hatred. That's what it is. It's hatred towards the Jews. And so the question is, when did that all start? Did it start with Hitler? Was it, how about Stalin? He had some problems. How about Lenin? When did Jew hatred really begin? I mean, when did it first, when was it first recorded?
You know what? I think that you should do an ad and then keep them in suspense.
Okay.
Hey, we can do that. How's that? All right. You know, there's nothing better than treating yourself to some good homemade baked goods. Oh, for heaven's cakes. You know what I'm talking about. You can smell it in your brain, right? Right down the hall here, north backside of the Grand Cities Mall. Best cupcakes or cakes, doesn't matter. Special occasion, just a treat. Maybe you want to hook your employees up to something good. Walk in to find out more. But again, the smell, the odor, it's wonderful. You're not going to want to leave. They're open Monday or Tuesdays through Fridays from 10 to 4, Saturdays 9 to noon. Call them up, 701-757-CAKE. You can also email them, oforheavenscakes@yahoo.com. Graduation isn't that far away, folks. Be ahead of the game. Be a beautiful cupcake in a world full of muffins at Oh for Heaven's Cakes in the Grand Cities Mall. You can't forget what you don't know, part 2, Hidden Agenda on Grand Forks Best Source. Welcome, everybody. David Waterman with the Midwest Public Health Coalition in the studio, along with myself and Paul, the producer. And,
So we left that kind of on a, well, it's supposed to be a cliffhanger. that's assuming that people want to know the answer to that question. And so the first, so I went to the most reliable news source anywhere online, Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He says tongue in cheek.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say the Inquirer.
They're similar.
Yeah.
Yes, right? So the first known, recorded anti-Semitism was in 740 BC, 740 years before Christ, where the Assyrian captivity is the period of history where ancient Israel and Judah, during which several thousand Israelites of ancient Samaria were resettled as captives by Assyria. The northern kingdom of Israel was conquered by the Neo-Assyrian Empire. And then in 586 BC, during the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar II, Neo-Babylonian Empire destroys the temple in Jerusalem and captures the kingdom of Judah and 10,000 Jewish families. 475 BC, Haman attempts genocide against the Jews. And then the footnote that it has is Purim. And that's all it says. And that's where I want to land today, because that's a very interesting story. I mean, it goes from there. Roman Emperor in 19 AD, Tiberius expels the Jews from Rome. And some of this we've talked about on the show multiple times. 38 AD, thousands of Jews killed in the Alexandrian pogrom. By the way, pogrom, the word pogrom, have you heard that before? Pogrom.
No.
It's a Russian word, and it means, it was a Russian word that originally didn't specifically refer to Jewish people, but the word pogrom is a Russian word that literally means a violent attack, like a violent riot against a group of people. And because it has happened so consistently throughout history to the Jewish people, the word pogrom basically now is understood to mean a violent attack or war against the Jews. And they've been going on for 2,700 years.
Wow.
In the world. So what happened was, I mean, everybody knows about Hitler, but nobody knows about Haman. It's interesting that they both start with the same letter.
Uh-huh.
Hitler and Haman.
Oh, sure.
So if we go to, you know, a lot of people think, here's what's interesting. A lot of people think that the Bible is just this old book and it's not, you know, reliable or that it's boring or whatever. And nothing could be further from the truth. Although I have to admit, when you get into numbers and some of the genealogies, it goes on and it's very hard to follow because they've got very difficult names. It's not like Tom and Sam and Julie and Dean. They're much longer and more difficult names. I'm not going to try to pronounce any right now. But the book of Esther is a very interesting book for a number of reasons. One is that it's one of the only books in Scripture that's literally a story that's told from beginning to end about something specific that happened historically. It's also only one of two books in the entire Bible that does not mention the name of God. The name God is nowhere found in the book of Esther. It's not in there. So you have to say, well, why is it in the Bible? Well, you'll find out in a minute. But it's not in there. And so for that reason, some people say, some people actually have said, critics have said, oh, that wasn't ever even part of, that was something that somebody just wrote years, hundreds of years later, and none of it was true, and there really was no King Ahasuerus, and it's all nonsense. Except guess what? They've been excavating at Susa, and guess what they've uncovered? They've uncovered the city that Esther talks about, mm-hmm. and the courtyard and the palace and all the grounds and everything just as it's described in the book of Esther in detail, in great detail. So what we have here is an account where God delivers someone from someone else in a way that never mentions his name. But we get great detail about what was going on. And it's a fascinating story. And it begins with, I've got a pretty strong idea. I think it's actually the right idea. I've heard other people of why the name of God is not mentioned in this book. Because this book was written during the reign of King Ahasuerus. Oh, by the way, his Hebrew name is Ahasuerus. His Greek name is Xerxes. So if you're reading ancient history about King Xerxes, mm-hmm. that's the same king.
Okay.
That's King Ahasuerus. They all had, his kingdom was so huge that people spoke all different languages, and each language has called him something different. You know, like we call Biden, mm-hmm. Joe Biden. In other parts of the world, I think they call him something else, which I'm not going to say. Say that on the air. So here's how it goes. In the days of King Ahasuerus, by the way, I'll tell you my theory before I read anything. I think that this whole story was written under the authority and with the approval of King Ahasuerus.
Okay.
I don't unlike any of the other books of the Bible, were written down because God said to the prophet, write this down, right? Or to the apostle, write this down, whatever. Or they wrote it down because they said, hey, we're going to lose this if we die. And so they wrote it down. I believe that this whole book was written under the authority and approval. It could have been written right in his court. And it's the only book in Scripture that really makes the king look good.
Okay.
Okay. So just, so put on your movie hat, please, and picture this scene, okay, because it's very descriptive. This took place in the days of King Ahasuerus. It specifies the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia. I was going to bring a picture of the globe showing. That's a massive huge chunk of land.
Yes.
Huge. India to Ethiopia. And he's in those days, King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne, which was in Susa, the capital. In the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his princes and attendants, the army of Persia and Media, the nobles, the princes of his provinces, being in his presence. So they were all there. So this is a massive banquet. It would take a large place. Oh, by the way, remember, Paul, last week you weren't here, but we talked about what happened with Daniel, how Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, and the king was King Darius. So here's a little nugget. King Darius is the father of King Xerxes, or King Ahasuerus. So Daniel was thrown in the lion's den against the will of his father, and then King Darius had a son whose name was Xerxes, or in Hebrew, Ahasuerus. So this is Daniel. This is Darius' son, who this story is about. Okay.
Okay.
So we're doing this chronologically, and yeah. So here's how rich this guy is. He displays the riches of his royal glory and the splendor of his great majesty for many days. It says many days. It also tells us how many. You want to take a guess how many days? How many days he had all his riches on display for everyone to see while he's throwing this party for all his officials? You want to take a guess how many days?
80. Wow.
Okay, that's a good guess.
365.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, that's good. So we always come in the middle. You could have said 1,000. 180 days.
Okay.
180 days. That's a 180-day party.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's a half a year. And at the end of the days, he gave a banquet lasting 7 days.
Wow.
For all the people in Susa. So the first part, the 180 days, that's just for the officials, you know, the army, the people that were close to him that are running his kingdom. And then he gave a banquet for all the people in Susa. And from the greatest to the least, in the court of the garden of the king's palace. So, could you, Paul, pull up? So for those who want to say this is all just a fable, guess what they've uncovered in Iran? They've uncovered the city of Susa, and there it is. And there is that's the royal city of Susa, and the citadel. Let's see, pull up the next slide and we'll just take a look at where things were. And I've got a lot more pictures than this, but we won't get to them today. There's where the royal palace was, the middle courtyard, the outer courtyard, the lower city, the king's gate. The royal city is off on the right. This is a very large place. I mean, his palace was massive. So when you hear these descriptions of what goes on, that's just kind of like the foundation of where these things happened, all right? Very, very big. So so it describes even what the way that they decorated their violet, white, fine white and violet linen held by cords of fine purple linen on silver rings and marble columns and couches made of gold and silver on mosaic pavements of porphyry and marble and mother of pearl and precious stones. The drinks were served in golden vessels of various kinds. Gold. They were serving the drinks out of gold vessels. This would be real gold, not looks like gold. It's real gold. And the royal wine was plentiful according to the king's bounty. Now, so they've got wine, and people are there drinking this wine. And you know how, I mean, we've all experienced being in a place where someone kind of encourages you to drink and maybe you don't want to. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe someone's recovering or whatever, and they just don't want to drink, but other people are trying to force them to drink. I mean, you've seen that, right? I've seen that. I've experienced that. Listen to this. That's not new. That's old. That goes way back, way, way, way back to, oh, by the way, this is 2,500 years ago when this happened. It says, and the drinking was done according to the law. There was no compulsion because the king had given orders to each official of his household that he should do according to the desires of each person. So he's saying, hey, if someone doesn't want to drink, don't make him drink. And if they want to drink, let them drink. And if they want to drink more than you are, then let them do that. Like, every person gets to decide how much or how little or whether to or not at all. Okay. Isn't it interesting that we get those details in this story? Queen Vashti was King Ahasuerus' wife. And while he's giving a... Oh, I can't show you. I'm sorry. I don't have the picture of that. No, I don't. While he's giving a... while he's having this big banquet, she, in another part of the banquet, another part of the palace, has a banquet for herself, for the women. So there's the men's banquet going on and the women's banquet going on. And anybody who identified as a woman got to go to the queen's banquet. That was a joke.
Okay.
Okay. So in those days, they knew the difference between a man and a woman, right? There was no question. So she's giving her banquet. And on the seventh day, when they see if you can interpret this for me. What does this mean? On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine. When it was merry with wine. What do you think? What does that mean?
7 day drunk. Yeah.
Okay. So he's definitely a little loose at that point, right? Mm-hmm. He commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Agbitha, I won't tell all the seven eunuchs, because there's seven eunuchs who serve in the presence of the king. He commanded them, his heart's merry with wine. You know what that means. And he says, hey, bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and the princes, because she was beautiful. So the whole city of Susa is there, and he says, bring my wife in. I want everyone to see how pretty she is. Tell her to come in right now. But Queen Vashti refused to come in. She heard the command. It was delivered by the eunuchs, and she said, I'm not going. Now, you're King Xerxes. You've given a command that everyone can hear. Bring my wife in so everyone can see how pretty she is. And the eunuchs come back and said, King, she said no.
If he was smart, he would have went, okay. Yes, dear.
He's the king. Guess what? Guess what you don't say to the king?
No.
Right. The king then became very angry, and his wrath burned within him. I mean, he was really angry. So he says to his wise men, who understood the times and the custom, it was the custom of the king to speak before all who knew the law and justice, those who were close to him, and then he gives the names. I'm not going to tell all their names. Yeah, the seven princes of Persia who had access to the king's presence, they sat in the first place of the kingdom. According to the law, he says, according to the law, what's to be done with Queen Vashti? Because she did not obey the command of King Ahasuerus delivered by the eunuchs. What do we do to her? So this is good because the king is showing respect for the law, right? He knows what he wants to do. But he says, what does the law say has to happen to Queen Vashti now? And so they all talk about it and they say, well, they say, here's what Memucan says. He says, Queen Vashti has wronged not only the king, but also all the princes and all the peoples who were in the provinces of King Ahasuerus. She's wronged everybody. The queen's conduct will become known to the women, causing all of them to look on contempt on their husbands. Once all these other women find out what Queen Vashti did, they're going to treat their own husbands the same way. Hey, honey, come in here. Honey, come on. Hey, let's sit together on the couch. I'm not going in. Right?
Yeah.
So that's what he says. He's warning the king. This is what's going to happen once all the other women find out. He says, because King Ahasuerus commanded the queen Vashti brought in his present, but she did not come. And this day, the ladies of Persia and Media who've heard of the queen's conduct will speak in the same way to all the king's princes, and there will be plenty of contempt and anger. He's saying, king, this is going to cause massive problems throughout your entire kingdom.
Huge backlash.
Huge backlash. Yeah, huge. Huge. And then he says this, if it pleases the king, let a royal edict be issued by him, and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media. Remember, Paul, what we talked about, the laws of the Medes and the Persians? What can happen once the king has issued an edict according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians? What's going to happen with that edict? How easy is it to revoke that? You can't revoke it. No, once it's written, it's done. It's permanent. Even the king himself can't undo his own edict.
Sure.
He says, let it be written so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti should come no more into the presence of King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal position to another who is more worthy than she. Just replace her, king. Get a new one. And so when the king's edict is heard throughout all his kingdom, that it, they always have to butter up the king a little bit, right? When the edict is heard throughout your whole kingdom, as great as it is, O king, then all the other women will give honor to their husbands, both great and small. Yeah, that's good. And this word pleased the king and his princes, and he did exactly as Memucan proposed. So he sent letters to all the king's provinces, each province. By the way, a letter in that day was inscribed on stone. It wasn't on paper. According to its script, to every people. So everyone, according to their own language, got the message that every man should be the master in his own house and the one who speaks in the language of his own people. So that's the edict. But now there's a problem. The king is queenless.
Yeah.
And so after these days, after his anger subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. And he's now kind of, I think, feeling maybe a little lonely.
Yeah.
Right? So
she was stuck with yes, dear.
So the so that's 21st century meets what century was that? 5th century. Then the king's attendants who served him said, "Hey, listen," he said, "King, let the beautiful young virgins be sought for the king. Let us do a search for beautiful young virgins, and let the king appoint overseers in all the provinces of his kingdom that they can gather every beautiful young virgin to Susa, the capital." So in other words, go throughout your kingdom, throughout all these provinces, looking for beautiful young virgins and have them brought here to Susa and into the custody of Haggai, who's the king's eunuch. They use eunuchs in those days for a number of reasons, and we all know what a eunuch is, right? It's someone who's been... what is it called when you take a male dog and you make it so that they can't reproduce? What is that?
Neutered. Spayed or neutered.
Yes, but yeah, it's, I think, what is it? So which, neutered or is neutered. For male, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so these are guys that are neutered. That's what a eunuch is. A guy that has no reproductive ability.
Yep.
And it's been said that the kings often would put eunuchs who are made by men with a knife in charge of like the harem, or would make them an attendant for their wife,
because
then they don't worry that the guy's going to be hitting on her.
Yep.
Right. So he gives Haggai, the king's eunuch, he puts him in charge. Yeah. Go find these beautiful women. And so let the young lady, and then he says, and let the young lady who pleases the king be queen in place of Vashti. And the matter pleased the king, and so he did that. He said, go do that. Bring these young women into me. He's getting an upgraded model.
Sure.
Anyway.
Sure.
Right. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. There's a Jewish woman living in Susa, and she had an uncle. Actually, it was her cousin. Okay. So in Susa, there's a Jewish man named Mordecai. He's the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, who's a Benjamite. And he'd been taken into exile from Jerusalem because the kingdom was now in the hands of Ahasuerus, right? He's conquered all these lands. And so all the Jewish people are now under his authority. He's part of their his massive kingdom. And so he was bringing up a young woman named Hadassah, whose name is also called Esther in the land of there. His uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and she was beautiful in form and face. You know what that means. Beautiful in form and face. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She was hot.
She wasn't, right? She wasn't a butterface.
Yeah.
She, right?
Yeah.
She was hot. She was hot. I like that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And Mordecai took her in as his own daughter. And when the command and the decree of the king were heard, oh, by the way, it wasn't voluntary. They didn't say, if your daughter would like to come with us.
Oh, yeah.
No.
No.
No. She's going. So they come and they take this woman, Hadassah, whose name was changed to Esther. And hey, guy looks at her, and the young lady pleased him, and she found favor with him. So he quickly provided her with cosmetics and food and gave her 7 choice maids. She's got now suddenly 7 servants, mm-hmm. 7 maids from the king's palace, and transferred her and her maids to the best place in the harem. In the harem, the best place in the harem. And Esther did not make known her people or her kindred, because Mordecai had instructed her that she should not make them known. In other words, no one knows she's Jewish, but she's beautiful. So every day Mordecai walked back and forth in front of the court, in front of the harem, to find out how Esther's doing. And after 12 months, under the regulations for the women, the days after their beautification were completed as follows: 6 months with oil of myrrh, 6 months with spices and cosmetics for the woman. The young lady would go into the king in this way, and anything she desired was given her to take from the harem to the king's palace. So they say, take something because the king likes this or doesn't like that or whatever. Anyway, she goes in, and then she wouldn't go in again unless the king was delighted by her, and then he called her back. So all these women are going in day after day after day, and whichever one he likes, he says, yeah, bring her back, and if he doesn't like her. So when it came turn for Esther to go in, she came to go into the king. She did not request anything except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge, advised. And he found favor in the eyes of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus, to his royal palace, on the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth. And the king loved Esther more than all the women, and she found favor and kindness with him more than all the other virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So a new queen, and it's Esther, a Jewish girl. Then the king gave a great banquet called Esther's banquet, for all his princes and his servants, and he made a holiday for the provinces and gave gifts according to the king's bounty. When all the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. And Esther still hadn't let anyone know that she's Jewish. This is where it gets really interesting, because one day Mordecai is sitting at the king's gate and hears two guys who are doorkeepers for the king's palace. They're plotting together to kill the king. It says in scripture they're going to lay hands on him, but that basically means they're going to grab him and kill him. And these guys are, let's see. We know their names, Bigthan and Teresh. They guarded the door, they became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So Mordecai knows that, and he tells his cousin, who's now the queen, he tells Esther about this plot to kill the king. And it says, now the plot was investigated and found to be true, and they were both hanged on a gallows, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the king's presence. So Mordecai, this Jewish man, hears this plot to kill the king. He tells his cousin, who's now the queen, about this plot. And the two guys, it's the investigation. Yep, they're guilty. They hang him. Okay, good. End of story. No, that's not the end of the story. Here's what happened. There's this other guy named Haman. And King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, who's the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and established his authority over all the princes who were with him. So this guy's got great authority. And the king's servants were at the king's, when they were at the king's gate, they bowed down to Haman. They bowed down to him and they paid homage to him. It's like they're worshiping him. So the king had commanded concerning him. They said, bow down. But when Haman comes, he's big. He's a big guy. You bow down to him. But Mordecai would not bow down and he would not pay homage. Then the king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, why are you transgressing the king's command? Now, when they'd spoken daily to him, he wouldn't listen to them. Then they went and told Haman, hey, Haman, oh, Haman, great Haman, there's this guy, this Jew named Mordecai, he never bows down to you whenever you come through. I don't know if you noticed, but he never bows down to you. So Haman, when Haman saw that Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage to him, Haman was filled with rage. Filled with rage. But he didn't want to lay hands on Mordecai alone because he thought, this guy's a Jew. I'm not just going to kill him. I'm going to kill him and every single Jew in the kingdom. That's how angry he was. Mm-hmm. You know why Haman wouldn't bow down and worship? I mean, why Mordecai wouldn't bow down? Because as a Jew, he only worshiped God. He wouldn't bow down to any man. He would only bow down to God. Because he was a Jew who knew the Bible, right? Okay, so here's what happens. We've got this king who's got a new queen, Queen Esther. Mordecai, her cousin, saves the king's life by reporting about this plot from these two doormen who want to kill the king. The king promotes this guy named Haman to become very great in the kingdom, and people are supposed to bow down and worship this guy. Mordecai won't do it, and Haman decides he's going to kill not just Haman, and not just Mordecai, but every single Jewish person in the kingdom, which would be all of them. Is there a question? Okay. Okay. So here's what happens. On the first month, that's the month Nisan, the 12th year of the king of King Ahasuerus, the word Purim comes from that. Pur, it's the lot that's cast before Haman from day to day and from month to month. It's like dice, right? Okay. It's like rolling dice to see, to find mm-hmm. out what he's supposed to do, right? Because it's kind of a little mysticism there. And then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, didn't name any names, Haman comes before the king and he says, there's a certain people scattered and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. And their laws are different from those of other people. And they don't observe the king's laws. So it's not in the king's interest to let them remain. King, these people that are dispersed throughout your kingdom, they're not paying attention to your laws. It's really not good for you to let them stay here. So if it's pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who carry out the king's business to put into the king's treasury. This is literally, it's not an exaggeration. This is literally equivalent to, I can't remember how many, it's tons of silver. Tons of silver. Haman's anger against the Jewish people is so great, just because of this one man, Mordecai. He's going to pay into the king's treasuries tons of his own personal wealth so that these Jewish people can be wiped out. The king took his signet ring, gave it to Haman, and he said, who's the enemy of the Jews? And he said to Haman, the silver is yours and the people also, to do with them as you please. So he puts the word out that as of this day, it's like a year from that date. Here's what he says. The letters are sent by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to seize their possessions as plunder. So on the first month, Haman comes, he says, is the king. The king says, okay, yep, go do it. Boom. So he gives them the signet ring. They send out the message that on the 12th month, all the Jews throughout his entire kingdom are to be murdered, man, woman, and child. There's the story. A copy of the edict to be issued as law in every province published for all the people so they will be ready for this day. So in other words, let's give them a year to get ready. You know, figure out who all the people are in their neighborhood that's Jews. Figure out how are you going to kill them. How are you going to take their stuff? You know, and let's make a big plan for that. The couriers went out impelled by the king's command while the decree was issued in Susa at the capital. And while the king and Haman sat down to drink, the city of Susa was in great confusion. And I'll close with this. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out in the midst of the city and wailed loudly and bitterly. And he went out as far as the king's gate, as far as the King's Gate, we can pull that up again later, showing what the King's Gate is. In each and every province where the command was decree and decree of the king was, there was great mourning among the Jews with fasting and weeping and wailing, and many laid on sackcloth and ashes. Can you just pull up that picture right there? Because what that is a picture of, and that was painted in like early 1800s, that's over on the right, on the extreme right, is Mordecai. He's sitting there with the, you know, the red, the white, and black robe. And then on the left, underneath the parasol that looks like an umbrella, that's Haman. And see, the other guys are bowing down to Haman, but Mordecai is just sitting there. He's paying him no mind. And that picture gives just a slight inkling of what the size of that palace was and the kingdom was. I mean, incredibly, incredibly wealthy, massive place. So he's the guy that Haman, the guy in the, with the black beard, wants to kill the guy in the white beard. So we'll just we'll leave it at that. So here's what happened. Haman has given the order. It's okay. Mordecai is weeping and wailing in the midst of the city of Susa. And then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen, and the queen writhed in great anguish. And she sent garments to clothe Mordecai that he might remove the sackcloth him, but he did not accept them. So Esther summoned Hathach from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to attend her, and ordered him, go to Mordecai and learn why he's crying and what this is all about. Because she's isolated, right? She's the queen. She's in the palace. She doesn't know what's happening. So Hathach went to Mordecai, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him, the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. And he gave him a copy of the text of the edict, which had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show Esther and inform her in order and to order her to go into the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for her people. And Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply this to Mordecai. Here's what her response was. All the king's servants and the people of all the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes to the king, to the inner court, who has not been summoned, there is but one law, and that is that he be put to death. Follow that? She's saying to Hathach, tell Mordecai that everybody knows that if anybody that goes into the king, including her, including the queen, if the king is sitting on his throne and they come in and he didn't ask for them, they're put to death. Unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. So that's where it is. We'll have to stop there because we're out of time.
Marie wants to know, does North Dakota have legislation on the books specifically outlining the state cannot do business with any person who doesn't support Israel? I do not know. They might be working on something, though. I was kind of trying to look it up, but anyway. All right.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that that's true.
I do know that.
I mean, there's no way to enforce that. How would you enforce that?
Well, yeah.
How would you enforce that?
She says it does. Well, why ask? It does. Okay. I don't know. I won't be able to look it up.
How would you enforce that? I mean, if you say GFS, I mean, yeah, I don't know how you enforce that.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, so we're going to leave it at this. Here's the cliffhanger. Mordecai has let Esther know, go plead with the king so that our people won't be destroyed. And she says to Mordecai, he hasn't called for me it's been 30 days. And he's in his court. If I go in there and he didn't summon me, he'll cut my head off. Unless he extends his gold scepter to me, and I have no idea. I don't know if he's angry, if he's sad, if he's upset, I have no idea what's going on with him. I haven't seen him for 30 days. But if I go in and he doesn't call for me, I'm dead. We'll finish it next week.
All right.
With pictures.
Notes here. All right. Yes, well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, John.
Glad I finally made it back today.
Me too.
Well, there we go. Today we're going to wrap up Hidden Agenda. By the way, the show today is been brought to you. Been brought to you by Redemption Shield.
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%. Redemption.
Yeah, just go to gfbestsource.com at the bottom of the homepage and click the shield to order today. By the way, folks, anybody out there, Marie Stewart, I know, has been texting on the show today. Anybody out there running for office, local, whatever it is, I don't care if it's Grand Forks or East Grand Forks, and you would like to get some airtime, feel free to email us local or email us local at gfbestsource.com. We'd love to get you on. We would even do some debates if you can get somebody to debate you or whatever. But if you're running for office, if you're not happy with who's in charge now, feel free. Again, email us local at gfbestsource.com. We'll book you. We're not afraid to get your word out there. Feel free, all right? Let's see. Grand Forks City Chatter is on at 1 o'clock here this afternoon. That's coming up fairly soon. Tomorrow, we're going to talk with Nathan Blair and a whole bunch of people, it sounds like, from the East Grand Forks Robotics Team. I know they've got a big, big event coming up, I believe, this weekend. Make sure to tune in. This could be something kind of new for me. I'm looking forward to it. So make sure to tune in and make sure to like, share, tag, and follow us, okay? If you hit that notification bell on your smartphone, you'll never miss a show. It dings every time we go on the air. Pretty cool deal. In the Grand Cities, we know they are grand. Grand Forks Best Source is giving them an identity again.